Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is Thursday, October 11th, 2018. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this week. We are publishing this commentary early this week. I'm flying to Europe on Thursday a.m., so I'm recording late Wednesday evening, and as a result, I'm using the Wednesday financial market close. I just wanted to point out last week we published a special Slayer Report with Alan Phillips. It's called Join Us in Supporting Alan Phillips and Your Health Freedoms. And Alan and I talk about his lawsuit and what he's dealing with to protect his clients and to protect our freedom to exercise exemptions from vaccines, but it relates to all health freedom. So I would encourage you to listen, particularly if you're interested in vaccines or in the effort to stop you from getting the kind of professional and legal help you need. Hold that date. A couple dates I want to point out to you. The Asian Consumer PDF should be ready by the end of this week. Well, no, the end of next week or early the following week, but it will be available in October. Megacities, the third quarter wrap-up, will roll out this month. I'm going to take a break next week for a walkabout with Harry Blaser. I wanted to sit down and discuss with Harry a little bit deeper about the kind of changes that Joseph and I discuss in part one and part two, and more importantly, how you deal with it. I just think the changes upon us are unprecedented, and I really want to make sure you're prepared. So we'll do that, and then we'll pick up with the equity overview and Rambus Chartology the following week, and then Megacities the week after that. I'm headed to a workshop this weekend in Amsterdam. Ulrich Groniger is teaching the Keys of Enoch, and you can find the information if you're in the Amsterdam area and you're interested. I'm sure you can still attend. They usually people come in at the last minute, and then I'll be headed to, we'll fly to Zurich, and then I'll go up to Lake Constance for a couple days, and then with Ulrich and her colleagues drive down to Italy. And then where Ulrich and I are going to be speaking at the Scientists for Peace conference, and you can see more about that under events if you're interested. As far as I know, there's one subscriber coming, so I hope to see. Please make sure if you're going that you let me know that you're there. Then I'm going to head to Switzerland. I'll be in Lugano, then Zurich, and then Basel. Zurich from the 23rd to the 26th, and then Basel from the 26th to the 4th, and then I'll be in New York. I'll stop on the way back in New York City from the November 4th to 8th, and then back to Hickory Valley. Our theme tonight is Space, Here We Go. That was the title of our 2015 annual wrap-up, our first really big piece on space. Richard Branson announced this week that the first Virgin Galactic spaceflight is weeks away. That's a big one. That means that private citizens are flying other private citizens into space and back. Most everybody had their minds on the market meltdown, but and in addition, Vice President Pence announcing basically the Cold War II is what the Wall Street Journal called it with the Chinese. But their noise in the sweep of history, if you compare it to what that first flight will be like. Private citizens flying private citizens into space is a real historical ringing of the bell, and it means that our participation in space is really going into a whole new phase, which it clearly is. But when you take it out of government hands and take it into private hands and make it accessible, or certainly more accessible to citizens, the first cost of the first flights will be $250,000. Branson says he's going to try and get it down to $40,000. When it happens, don't be surprised if it inspires imaginations around the world. And I know I'm praying for the brave men and women who are working tirelessly to make this happen. Money and markets. It's quite an exciting time in the markets. The U.S. dollar index now up 3.83% for the year. Fixed income. We got quite a trashing in the fixed income markets. You have the Treasury pounding the markets for more money this week, over $200 billion, I think the number is. So long Treasury now down 8.75%. That's the ETF. the intermediate down 3.69, the bond aggregate down 2.53. That ETF had over $2 billion of withdrawals reported in the last week. It's about $53 trillion, so it's a $2 billion is a small percentage, but you can see people are nervous about the bond market. And then junk now, slightly negative, 3 basis point negative for the year. Clearly, there's pressure on interest rates with bigger deficits from the United States and debt problems around the world, and the Fed bumping the interest rates up, something the president now coming into elections is complaining about. I've always said the problem would start if we got more than 150 basis point rise in a year. We're now looking at the one-year Treasury being up, if you just look at the yield curve, 136 basis points since last October. So we're getting close to that 150 mark. We're not there yet. The 10-year's 88 basis points are up 88 basis points over the year. 20-year up 69 basis points. The 30-year up 52 basis points. So it's in the short end, but the short end is where the market finances their positions. The fundamental fact here, though, is as interest rates are rising, you have a repricing of risk assets. Quantitative easing was like a methadone that kept everything bubbled. And now investors are going to have to be much more discerning and price in a lot more for real risk. It's also very attractive as yields rise to just run up with a short-term or intermediate bank deposit or corporate bond, and just ride those interest rates up, since already you're outperforming the S&P yields. So one possibility is the S&P drops in price down to where the yields can start to be more competitive. So turning to equities, we saw many of the stock markets melt down through their 50-day moving average, and many also melt down through their 200-day moving average. If they don't correct back up above the 200 moving average, we could really be in for a serious consolidation. The S&P down today, or down Wednesday, over 3%. Part of that was the tech stocks, down over 5%. The S&P now up 5.65% for the year. Home builders really melting down with interest rates. They're down 19.17%, but almost 20%. We saw big drops in the after-hours markets, the after-market trading, and the futures markets. Japan and China are down 3 to 4%. Europe is down 1 to 3%, depending on the particular market. But for the year, Europe's only down 2.46%, but it's certainly going to be down more as of the close Thursday. Germany down 12.91%. They're right in the crosshairs of a lot of issues, including what's going on in the European Union. Developed markets down 6.4%. That's minus North America. China, large caps down 13.45%. Small caps down 18.66%. The trade wars are hitting Chinese business hard. There's no doubt about it. Emerging markets now down 15.53%. Well, what's the problem? There are a couple of things going on. I think the first and biggest problem is the Cold War number two. The Pence announcement, he gave a speech at the Hudson Institute. We put it up on the website. But if you look at his announcement of sort of the new policy against China plus trade wars, the implications are profound. For many decades, we've had a win-win with China, and we seem to be racing with into a serious competition on technology, and the competition has gotten quite warlike with announcements, several announcements this week of compromised chips and sort of Chinese spy chips, and a lack of integrity in the tech system in terms of the ability of China and the U.S. to trust each other when it comes to integrity of products and services in that area. You add to it other tech integrity problems, such as the announcement that Google had compromised, or Google data had been compromised. And again, it brings up all sorts of question marks over tech. Add to that real trouble in the South China Sea that Pence talked about in his announcement at the Hudson Institute. all of it makes for a real fear by investors that you're going to leave the win-win behind and go into that lose-lose. I think a lot of what Pence talked about, or what the headlines have been sort of about the covert war between China and the U.S. over the last year, I think a lot of that's been happening and known, but now the administration has decided to start making it public. Clearly, interest rates are a big problem, but I think they're far from the only one. I think the Cold War, too, is more of a problem than the interest rates. And then finally, the emerging market and the U.S. dollar bear trap. There's no doubt as the U.S. repatriates dollars and pulls capital back into what is, for now, one of the strongest economies. The emerging markets that have borrowed a lot of dollars, and that includes a lot of companies in China, are really in over a barrel. What the investors are worried about is if there's a real seize up in liquidity in the dollar market, those emerging market countries are in for a very, very rough ride. And of course, as I mentioned 2 weeks ago, with coming into earnings season, there's a buyback slowdown. So it's going to be very interesting how people react to different earnings as they come out for the third quarter. One article I put up this week was on PP&G. It's got an activist investor buying in, but it had real earnings problems. And you can see how all of these macro events play into somebody's sort of financial statements. The rising interest rate expense, the rising energy costs, drop in profits because of trade wars, greater uncertainty. We also see Ackerman, the activist investor, going after Starbucks. As the market corrects, don't be surprised if the smart private equity jumps in and uses this correction to skim more. One of the dangers, of course, as Elon Musk suggested, is that short sellers, whether through the media or through the enforcement apparatus, make more trouble for companies than they really deserve and jump in and take advantage of it, whether they're activist investors trying to buy up a big position or short sellers just trying to make crazy. Commodities, the commodity index now down 3.36% for the year. Gold down 8.71%, silver down 15.88%, and oil's backed off a little bit. It's now at 36.39%, but clearly that's good for Russia and the Saudis, and a lot of other people are selling oil. Okay, let's look at what's been going on in the U.S. A couple things I want to talk about. Obviously, the Kavanaugh is now heard the Supreme Court cases. He's over at the Supreme Court listening to cases this week. The question is, what did that whole experience, what impact will it have on the midterm U.S. elections? It looks like it's going to go a great distance to helping the Republican group keep the Senate Republican. If you look at the history of the sort of 2 years into a new president's term, traditionally, depending on where you are in the polls, you lose 20 to 40 House seats, the presidential party. And so clearly the Republicans are in danger of losing the House. And the question is, the last polls I saw, they had them losing the House, but not losing the Senate. I think it's going to be a real food fight for the next couple weeks. Kavanaugh is a Bush man. We saw former President W. Bush calling around and supporting him. And so if you look at the rumors of purges ahead, the question is, where will the Bushies stand if their man's going into the Supreme Court and their man's going into the Fed, which clearly we had a Bush guy going there because he was a Brady guy, and Brady's a Bush guy. So if you have the Bushies populating the Supreme Court and the central bank, whatever happens with the purges, it looks like the Bushes have made their deal. There are a lot of unanswered questions about the state of the Anglo-American alliance, particularly because there's one theory that I tend to support, that the part of the reason for the Kavanaugh vote getting so out of hand was the need to distract against the debate over whether the FISA documentation was going to be revealed if you now look at what's been going on at the FBI and Department of Justice, it turned out that the only evidence whatsoever of any kind of Russian interference had been manufactured by the FBI, the DNC, the Clinton campaign, and a variety of parties helping at the Department of Justice. So it really does look like the Department of Justice and FBI may have been engaged in a major action of treason and violating all sorts of laws related to the FISA process and surveillance of Americans. It appears that if that is the case, the one of the primary reasons to not let those documents be reclassified declassified and shared was that Australia and the UK were objecting, which is kind of scary. Anyway, so was Kavanaugh a big distraction? Who knows? There was a real effort, I think, to try and block the Kavanaugh nomination. And one of the questions is that because purges are coming? Clearly something is up. You have too many sealed indictments. You have an executive order that permits military tribunals, and you have $21 trillion missing from the federal government, including $6.5 trillion in 2015 alone, the last sort of fiscal year of the Obama administration. Nikki Haley has resigned as of the end of the year her position at the UN. Question is, who's going in? Trump mentioned that his daughter would be great. His daughter immediately tweeted out she was staying right where she was. Her portfolio is jobs for Americans in the White House, and she's way too smart to sort of turn the corner and head back to New York right now. You see Congress passed the Build Act. It's essentially $60 billion to lend and compete for equity with China in both Africa and the Silk Road. And you see, again, you very much see the influence of the competition with China. We've talked for a long time on the Saleri Report about the rollout of 5G. Verizon has announced it's turned on 5G in Houston, LA, Sacramento, and Indianapolis. We're going to be very interested to see what the impact is on health, what the impact is on clear thinking, other things going on in those markets. Europe is in a real state of flux because we have the Italians refusing to comply with both austerity and different issues related to immigration. If you look at what the Italians are up to, you could really see the European Union and the euro impacted very dramatically, and that, you know, that translates into challenges in the derivatives market. It wouldn't surprise me if part of what you're seeing happen in America is America trying to make sure if there is a derivatives blow up, it's a European issue, not an American issue. Although I think given the nature of the derivatives market, it's hard to put up a wall against it. Looks like Brexit, May and the EU are getting closer to a deal. Very interesting comment on politics. I put up a link to the Economist story on Putin's woes. Putin has backtracked on commitments to pensioners in Russia, and it's causing him to take a serious beating in the polls. You can see why the American leadership is worried about what happens when they have to start to change either Social Security or pension funds. You can see why politicians don't want to deal with it, because if you look at the extent of Putin's popularity and the nosedive he's taken just from trying to face the real issues on the pensions, you can see the desire of society not to face these issues. Eurasia. We see a new roadway finally open up all the way from the Yellow Sea in eastern China to St. Petersburg. Lorries can now drive in 10 days. The last number I saw was trains that would go in 11 days. So this is pretty amazing, especially because ultimately you'll be able to do it with driverless trucks. The Deutsche Bahn railroad, the German railroad, has opened a Eurasia division. Their goal is transporting 100,000 standard containers a year by 2020 between Europe and China. So the land empire is absolutely rising, and it's part of what I think inspired that and what's going on in the South China Sea inspired the U.S.-China policy announced by Vice President Pence. There's no doubt at the heart of all of this is a tech battle, and the China spy chip stories that were published this week really put a chill down the brand of American tech, because you're talking about a significant number of companies being compromised at a very deep level. You're talking about chips in the hardware. So it's a real argument for bringing manufacturing back and making sure the national or certainly the military sources internally from much more trusted sources. Hong Kong is now taking sides. We saw the PRC move much more in after the 20th anniversary of the takeover of Hong Kong, but they have now denied Navy ships the ability to use Hong Kong as a port. When I lived in Hong Kong, the Navy ships would come in and trade their garbage and get painted and out they'd go. But a Navy ship was denied entrance in October last month. We now see a Financial Times reporter booted because he played a leading role at the Asian Correspondents Society. In fact, I was there when I was in Hong Kong. People get together and talk about the issues of the day, and they had one of the young men who'd led one of the protests in Hong Kong, or was active in the sort of the Hong Kong protesting, come and speak, and lo and behold, his visa was not renewed, so out he goes. And as I said, Congress passed the Build Act. It's interesting. Congress is saying they don't have $60 billion for rebuilding the infrastructure of America, but here we go with much more foreign aid for Africa and the Silk Road. And so when you see the intensity with which Trump promotes and believes in Make America Great Again, he can't get money for infrastructure in the U.S., but the competition with China is so heated that he can get $60 billion for Africa and the Silk Road. Now, I should point out some of that's not new money. That's just sort of reconfigured, re-engineered how they're going to do it. What you can see from the news is how important pension funds, space, the rise of Asia, and a lot of the other themes we talk about on the Salier Report are. So read those big themes in the wrap-up, because they'll help you make a lot of sense out of the noise of the day. Our hero this week is Kelly Ashby, who is Senator Rand Paul's wife. She wrote a letter inspired by Senator Booker's comments egging people on to be what she felt was politically violent, and gave a series of interviews. I thought it was excellent in many respects. One, she was very gracious in the way she did it, but she helped communicate how much physical danger senators like Rand Paul or politicians like Rand Paul are facing. She sleeps with a gun. It's not okay. She said it very graciously, but Paul was a doctor before he became a senator. His dad was a doctor too. He was at the shooting where Stephen Scalise was almost killed. He was close to being shot and killed. And then not that long after that, he was attacked by a neighbor, 6 broken ribs, serious lung problems, and he and his wife regularly received death threats. So if you look at the kind of physical danger and risk that they're living with, it's not okay. I felt like saying I would note that Chuck Schumer does not seem to have these problems. Let's go to the movies. I wanted to point out Dark Money to you. It's a new PBS documentary on the buying and selling of elections by untraceable money. It's an issue I touch on in story number 13 when I talk about the highly centralized financing of the transhumanist and transgender movement. I also tweeted this week, I got a mailing for Phil Bredesen, who is running as a Democrat for senator here in Tennessee Phil Bredesen, in my opinion, has been an exceptional public servant. And what got sent to me was from a PAC financed by Adelson and Steven Schwarzman. So you basically have a couple of billionaires clogging up the U.S. mails with total trash. If I wasn't so sort of opposed to Chuck Schumer being a Senate Majority Leader, I assure you I would vote for Bredesen. And if I wasn't going to vote for Bredesen before, I certainly would have voted for him after I saw kind of the trash that was being sent on behalf of the Republicans. So I think this idea of untraceable money pouring into the elections is a serious problem. Of course, that started with the Supreme Court's problem and a problem in the courts that allows an infinite amount of kind of secret money into the election process. But dark money does a very good job using Montana elections as the example of giving you a sense of how serious the problem is. Our interview this week, of course, is the second part of News Trends and Stories of our third quarter 2018 wrap-up. Joseph and I really try and synthesize the important themes that you really need to understand to, I love the expression from Sam Smith, all the news while there's still time to do something about it. We really wanted to focus you on the fact that the speed of change is speeding up. We're going up on the S-curve on a whole series of different issues, whether it's bringing the space effort into the overt side of the world and the economy, whether it's what's happening with the sciences, material sciences, biosciences, the rise of Asia, and the explosion of AI and robotics, which I think is going to be very significant. One of the things we talk about is AI deep learning. Who has the most data, and what does that mean for the competition between the superpowers? You can access the complete News Trends and Stories section at the web presentation for the third quarter 2018 wrap-up. Just click on the commentary. There's a link at the commentary, and use your Salary Report password to log in. We'll continue to build the web presentation as we move through the equity overview and blockbuster chartology, and then the megacities theme, and then finally to the PDF. And again, before the end of the month, look for the PDF for Asian consumer to be ready. And then, of course, we'll be sending that to the printer for the hard copies, and the premium subscribers will be getting them. Ask Catherine. Your experience with our Justice Department shocked and angered me. From this particular site information, are you optimistic that this corrupt system is coming down? They sent a link to the QAnon system showing all the people who'd been retired or Forrester turned or said to turn state's evidence at the FBI and Department of Justice. If you look at the transition from a one-party administration to another party administration, this kind of turnover at the FBI or the DOJ at the top levels is not that surprising. You would expect to have new heads, and then you would expect those new heads to turn over their staff. So that kind of turnover, I haven't compared it statistically to prior administrations, but I wouldn't expect it to be that different from, for example, going from Carter to a Reagan administration. At the same time, if you look at the crazy things that the group at the FBI and DOJ were up to in terms of literally trying to impeach or prevent Trump from winning the election or impeach him, I would say the evidence appears to be very, very bad. And I'm hoping that the sort of evidence is made transparent and we can really see what was going on. And if it's as bad as it is, I think clearly there needs to be one or more prosecutions. This was very serious stuff. I would note a lot is coming out from multiple sources. People are beginning to feel more and more confident of putting forward their complaints and their cases against the Department of Justice. We see a new presentation that I've posted and tweeted out from Lynn Ulbricht at the Free Raw site an incredible piece called Railroaded that really documents what was done to Ross Ulbricht. And there's a real effort now to get a petition to get the president to basically pardon Ross Ulbricht. I'm going to do everything I can to help. We see Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, filing a complaint against the DOJ attorneys who lied regarding evidence in the vaccine case he's been litigating. And then, of course, many people now know about my case and what happened with just astonishingly corrupt behavior from either the attorneys at the HUD IG office or the Department of Justice. I should underscore it was not every attorney. So there was good guys and bad guys, but there were a lot of bad guys. And then I would point out last year we had a wonderful businessman, Howard Root, on the Salieri Report. I reviewed his new book, Cardiac Arrest, The Criminalization of America, and then had him on the Salieri Report. And it's a very compelling case that describes the corruption at the Department of Justice and what it does to destroy good businesses. So I think the America is getting quite an education on what happens when the sheriff of Nottingham runs the system. And I think the question is, what are we going to do about it when the model, because the Department of Justice is basically running what I call the control and concentration of cash flow. And to make sure that your courts and your enforcement is lawful, you need your financial and economic model to be lawful. And that's as we know, that's a deep, big issue. But clearly the shock and frustration with the Department of Justice is significant and growing. And it'll be very interesting to see where that evolves and where the president takes that. I think I'm still not clear where he intends that to go. We'll just have to see. I talked with Joseph Farrell a lot about that in the part one and part two of the News Trends and Stories. Another person writes, in the YouTube below, Ralph Nader mentioned this article that he wrote for Latham's Quarterly Spring, Land of the Lawless, How Power in America Has Turned the Rule of Law into a Mere Myth. And they said, Ralph Nader still uses an Underwood typewriter. Nader apparently says, quote, lawlessness is the norm in our country for the rich and powerful. Dear Catherine, perhaps you are familiar with Bruce Fein, as he is a constitutional scholar and has written books on American Empire Constitutional Peril. I learned a lot about the erosion of our rights and the role judges and law schools have played in this. Kavanaugh's biases and his role in partisan politics are discussed. He participated in the suppression of the Florida votes in 2000, worked with Ken Starr on the Clinton impeachment, and more. Okay, more to say on this, and I'll jump because we've got a couple more questions on Kavanaugh. Space mining, somebody sent me a great link. I'll put it, I have it in the notes. It's a claim that a huge alien spacecraft was spotted from the International Space Station, story about it. I would only comment that people with whom you interact that are not strongly embedded in the Judeo-Christian tradition are very likely to harbor distorted ideas about any and all subject matter for which they are consulted. Our religious beliefs inform every intellectual concept that we formulate. You need to decide where you stand spiritually. Your ability to produce good in the world as you seem to desire is wholly contingent upon that. Others are welcome to their worldviews, but we do not need to be drawn into them. So I would say that I know where I stand spiritually, which is indeed quite strongly in the ancient Christian tradition. But among other things, I'm not led to preach it. And I'm led to bring transparency to finances and resources so others can access the information they need to exercise their faith and purpose successfully. For me, Christianity is what is in your spirit and your actions, not in your ideology. So it depends on how one applies it. Religion and religious institutions, in my experience, have been used too often for mind control and control and disinformation and misleading. I spent a long time sojourning among American churches trying to understand how a country could be systematically engaged globally in significant genocide while 70% were pretending they were Christians. So at this point, I have a very significant loyalty and spiritual life within, again, what I would describe as an ancient Christian tradition. At the same time, I find myself at odds with many of the people who are very insistent that they are Christians and we should only associate with other Christians, because I find more often than not they don't behave like Christians. And so I try to align myself with people who share the same values as I do. But I don't require that they express that with organized Christian ideology. So I'd need to have a much more intimate conversation with you to understand whether we agree or not. But I for one have found far too many ideologues promoting a kind and a form of Christianity that to me is not Christian. So anyway, it can get to be a very murky, complex subject. But again, I have to tell you, I'm not called to preach Christianity. I'm just called to try and live a Christian life, which I find is, there's so much room for opportunity in my day-to-day actions that that's my focus as opposed to preaching it. I very much enjoyed your introduction of the wellness series. As a naturopathic physician and homeopath, I always advise my patients to invest in their health. And then they go on to say that they hope we do something on homeopathy. I think that would be fabulous. I would love to see Bridget do that, so I will forward that to her. You are right that the focus on Blasey Ford is a distraction. It is a distraction from acknowledging the damage already done by the right-wing politicized court bringing a Citizens United. Couldn't agree more. And what it will bring next. It is a distraction from the powers of money influenced by foreign nations such as Saudi Arabia and Israel. Couldn't agree more. Saudis and Israelis are affecting and have affected the outcome of congressional legislation, news coverage, political campaigns, and much more. Yes. You ought to, if you haven't listened to my discussion with Congressman McKinney in the 2016 wrap up, or was it two? It's the one on the Constitution as 2017. The problem of Congress people with dual citizenship is a serious problem. You continue, they fight any efforts to stop funding the wars in Yemen and elsewhere in the Middle East. Talk about mind control. Yes, I agree. It is a distraction from what Greg Palast has shown in his research on elections, voter suppression, what he calls the new Jim Crow, gerrymandering, and much more. Yes, I just tweeted out a new piece from Palast. The rule of law means little in the USA. I disagree with that. There are still many excellent people who believe in the rule of law, and their presence makes an enormous difference, and their belief in the law makes an enormous difference. And I would never negate or denigrate them by saying the rule of law means little in the U.S., because as long as they're here, it means something. Some people work diligently to make sure it stays that way from the very top to the very local. Congress was denied the White House papers on Kavanaugh's time in the Bush Rove administration. How confusing it is to hear you talk about transparency in government and then watch you support the opposite. I just couldn't disagree more. That's like saying that my assistant when I was at New York or Hamilton was responsible for the paperwork that they flowed back and forth and around my office on my behalf. Kavanaugh was in a staff role. He wasn't a policymaker. That's a huge amount of documentation to try and declassify and organize all of it when it really is not relevant to his role as a decision maker. His role as a decision maker came when he was a judge, and there's plenty of material that you can use to prove that Kavanaugh clearly was on board to support the establishment with all sorts of his decisions as a judge. So I think the way you, I would have loved to have seen a serious conversation about what his judicial role had been, what decisions he made, and what it said about whether he would make a good Supreme Court justice. Of course, that's the conversation we didn't have because nobody thought that would be of interest in entertaining. But here is why I get so frustrated. The reality is if you allow $21 trillion to go missing and you have no financial accountability, where there is no effort to require transparency about what the black budget is about or to enforce the constitutional laws related to financial management or the financial management laws, if you have money that is this completely out of control, then the reality is that you can't fix the problem by fighting about who's going to be the next Supreme Court justice, because between the secrecy and the non-accountability of the money, you have a system that's totally out of control. And to try and fight it about by saying that a particular candidate is vested in secrecy and central control and non-accountability of the money is simply to say, you know, he fits with the model that everybody's using, and if he didn't, he wouldn't have the support of the model. But trying to stop it at the Kavanaugh level is like trying to stop a tsunami with a spoon. So I think it's incredibly important to deal with the root problem, which is the secrecy and the non-accountability of the money. You know, if you look at Kavanaugh's support for the Patriot Act or some of the other silly stuff he supported, that's basically an essential stepping stone of the secrecy and non-accountability. So let's hack at the root and not at the twigs. And the reason for 20 years I'm a broken record hacking on the first it was $4 trillion and then it was $8 trillion and then it was $18 trillion and then it was $21 trillion. And the reason I'm hacking on that, because unless you change that, all these other things are like fighting a tsunami with a spoon. So let's bring transparency. And I assure you, trying in the middle of a judicial appointment to bring transparency by demanding years of the entire Bush paper flow when Kavanaugh was basically a fancy version of a secretary in that function against staff, not a policymaker. I just think that's, you're going to things without understanding how you get to some real change. So please get interested in the $21 trillion. Dear Catherine and Joseph, my two cents about Kavanaugh, it was a throw, it was a distraction, and then they go into the theory of the FISA court and the danger of those that information becoming public. Very good analysis. I think there's a legitimate or there's a lot to argue that was the case. Then they go on to say, and the answer is yes. No one in the above named nations agencies and many others are as well, like Wall Street, cares about due process and the rule of law. I'm not saying that ultimately will be in their best interest, but right now they believe they would be better off without it. This means martial law or civil war and a dictator. Remember, Caesar came to power because the Roman Senate was so hopelessly corrupt that he could present himself as a man of the people. Touché, very important thing to remember. By the way, martial law is already declared. If you look back at the executive order signed by Trump on December 31st, 2017, along with the state of emergency the U.S. has been in since 9/11, it's pretty much legally gives him all he needs legally. Finally, a happy thought. Perhaps the reason for the military tribunals is there are not enough honest judges in the federal system to try so many people. I don't think it's that there are not enough honest judges, although clearly the judiciary has been very compromised. I do think that if you look at the violence that's being used in Washington. So I described the violence with Senator Paul, or the violence I saw, or the dirty tricks or sort of covert operations I saw targeting judges in the federal system when I was litigating. What I would say is that the benefit of using military tribunals is you're using judges within an infrastructure who have the physical ability to protect the judges and their families on military bases from that kind of violence. And they know how to deal, as members of the military, they know how to deal with that kind of violence. And they're set up to handle it and to protect the tribunals from that risk. So I think we're basically now in a state approaching mob war. And the question is, will the military have the physical infrastructure to deal with it more successfully? That's it for this evening. In closing, next week, our Salary Report is going to be learning to walk about with Harry Blaser, and I'll be doing Money and Markets from Lake Constance. Then, as a special, we're going to publish the, hopefully next Thursday, but it'll be sometime next week, the new food series interview, Harry with Dr. Kilgore on dental health. And I have an interview with Melissa and Aaron Dykes of True Stream Media on the Minds of Men that was delayed when they couldn't. They had to delay their interview, but we'll just publish them as they're ready. And then I'll be talking to you from Zurich on October 25th. We'll do the equity overview and blockbuster chartology. We have plenty to talk about. Remember, a lot of times what they say in the equity markets, elevator down, escalator up. So if we're in for a real correction, there's quite a lot of correcting we could do between now and October 25th. So Zurich will be the perfect place to have that discussion. So until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.